Just like to now formally welcome and introduce Gary to the audience. The Honourable Dr. Gary Johns is the Commissioner of the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission. Dr. Johns has previously held roles as a Director of the Australian Institute for Progress and an Adjunct Professor at the Queensland University of Technology Business School. He has served as a member of the Prime Minister's Community Business Partnership and the Committee to Advise on the Redress Scheme for the Survivors of Child Sexual Abuse. He has wide-ranging experience in regulation, public service and policy, serving as an Associate Commissioner of the Productivity Commission and representing the electorate of Petrie in the federal government from 1987 to 1996, and as a minister in the Keating government. Dr. Johns was also a columnist in The Australian, or for The Australian, and has authored a number of books on charities and the not-for-profit sector. I'd like to welcome Gary.
Thank you, Mark and Dillis. Now we've got through the across the first main hurdle, that is, when you leave your speech here, it has been known for the person who introduced the speaker to walk away with the speech. You've not done that, Mark, thank you. So that's a hurdle covered. Now, the debate always in these things is whether you speak off the cuff, which I'm always happy to do, or read a prepared speech. But given that we have a Q&A, I always feel you can pack a lot more into a prepared speech. There's a lot more detail that I can give you. So that's what I want to do, and more than happy then to take questions. And I believe this is being recorded. Phyllis, yeah, okay, thank you very much indeed. Now, Australia would be a poorer place without charities. Charities existed before the regulator, indeed before government. Now that charities have their own regulator, the key is to have the regulator add value to the work of charities. This does not mean that the regulator is the charity's friend, and I am not their man in Canberra. As a regulator, among other things, my job is to provide information to help the public understand the work of the charity sector and to support the transparency and accountability of the sector. The information I provide may also drive change in the sector to ensure that more of the charity dollar fulfills its purpose. The advantage of taking charge of the Commission at this time is that I inherit a mature agency with 5 years of experience and 5 years of data. I intend to use that experience and data to good effect. I intend to place as much data as possible into the hands of donors so that they can help drive the sector to greater efficiency and effectiveness. There are numerous pathways to better regulation of the charity sector. Each has limitations. Legislation and the common law may be powerful instruments to clarify, as examples, the definition of government entity, the charitable nature of industry and professional associations, the limits to commercial activities undertaken by charities, or activities charities can and cannot undertake while maintaining purpose, including political activity. But these are very slow instruments of change. Similarly, a dedicated accounting standard for charities and national acceptance of a single definition of charity would be big reforms, but they too are slow. Not forsaking these important instruments and debates, what can we use now to effect some change beneficial to charity? I believe the best way is to place data, which by law I gather from charities, into the hands of the public. It's up to the public that's donors, members, volunteers and taxpayers, to decide what it wants to do with the data. I want to share with the public the regulation of charities by lowering the cost of finding relevant data. The reason for placing data into the hands of the public is to improve the market for charitable intentions, that is, to help drive every charity dollar further. Now, some are uncomfortable with the concept of a charity market. In giving to a cause, donors buy assurances from charities that they, the charity, will do as they say. The charities use images and data to sell their wares, to save a child in Africa, to rescue a stray dog, to save the planet. Donors buy those assurances. To me, that is a market. In this market, does a donor know whether one provider could do a better job than another? If they had better information, would donors switch? A recent US study suggests they might. The study found that if they had evidence of better performance, about 14% of donors might switch from their current charity. Donors reported that the most important pieces of information were how the organisation would use the donation and the amount of good it would do. A recent Australian survey suggests that Australian donors too might respond to better information. Some 48% of those who do not presently give indicated that better information on how the money would be spent would influence their future giving. In another Australian survey, approximately 70% of respondents answered that it was highly important for a charity to disclose three pieces of information: donation use, proportions spent on the cause, and outcomes achieved. Further, 57% of donors strongly agree that they trust charities that are transparent about how they use their resources. Not all donors will change their donating habits when presented with better metrics, but some will, and their choices may create a better market. Most donors want to know how much of their dollar hits the mark, whether the mark is efficiency or effectiveness or whatever the donor values. We know, however, that few donors are willing to pay for the information. Our challenge is to lower the cost of accessing the right metrics. So far, the Commission has been able to provide the market with a geography lesson. The charities report, for example, describes the landscape of charities, mainly size, type and location. But it does not help a donor decide which charity is best. The charity registry, for example, is a valuable tool to find a charity you already know, to verify its registration and some of its characteristics. But it does not help a donor compare charities that operate with the same purpose or administer to the same people or causes. Now, different constituencies want different things. Each has implications for metrics and for regulation. Some accountants want a dedicated accounting standard. Some lawyers want a nationally accepted single definition of charity. Some fundraisers want a national regulatory framework for fundraising. These changes would enable comparable metrics and, incidentally, reduce regulation. On the other hand, some charities want less government regulation, but more money from government. And I can tell you that 50% of charities receive government funds. All in all, this may require more regulation. Some philanthropists and other donors want to find the best charity for the cause they support, which may require more information, if not public regulation. And some academics want measures of charity impact, which requires more information, if not public regulation. So, how do I fulfil these wishes and fulfil the objectives of the ACNC and not blow the budget? Well, here are my four starting points. First, progressively make readily available to donors data presently gathered by the Commission. Second, enable donors to find like charities on the ACNC website. Third, refine data to ensure donors can make valid comparisons of charity performance. At present, if donors had the time and money, they could use existing data to compare charities. Much of the data, however, on financial performance is not comparable. Fourth, seed questions that donors could ask of responsible persons to ensure that they are considering their purpose and their activities. For example, we could ask if a board has contracted a fundraising company and whether it has disclosed the terms of the contract to members. I would report the answers, that is, yes or no answers. I would not have any role in setting fundraising standards or publishing the contracts. Until now, the ACNC has concentrated on the small numbers, approximately 3,000 registrations and a handful of revocations following investigation each year. This work must continue, but 55,000 charities submit an annual information statement. It is this data that should be shared with the broadest number of people in a way that may assist their donor decision. Is the desire to share data consistent with the objects of the Commission's Act? The simple answer is yes. The more complex answer rests with the search for measures that might breathe further life into the Commission's objectives. The Commission's Act has three objectives: to maintain public trust and confidence, to support a robust, vibrant, independent and innovative sector, and to promote reduction in regulatory obligations. In a submission to the five-year review of the Act, I've suggested two new objects be inserted around the effective use of resources and accountability. The suggested new objectives are the same as those for the Charity Commission of England and Wales. These are objectives, not powers. They would not give the Commission any new or more power. The powers of the Commission derive from the statutory definition of the charity in the Charities Act, and powers in the Commission's Act, which drive registration, and standards of governance in the Commission's regulations, which drive compliance, and data in the annual information statement. Apart from freeing my hand to inform the sector of decisions that I make, there is little else that I require in the way of new powers. I have no desire to run a charity. However, the Act states that the Commissioner must have regard, quote, to the maintenance and promotion of the effectiveness and sustainability of the not-for-profit sector, end of quote. Sustainability is an Alice in Wonderland word. It means different things to different people. To some it means getting a three-year grant from government instead of a one-year grant. To others, it means running an efficient organisation regardless of sources of income. A recent Community Council of Australia paper argued the case for mergers and collaborations, also known as acquisitions, on the grounds of sector efficiency and effectiveness. In a second paper on the best use of assets, they called out lazy balance sheets. Is anyone suggesting that the sector should not seek to be efficient and effective? The new objects would serve to remind the sector that as much of the donor dollar should be used to achieve its purpose. This is a matter of the performance of charities in a market. There is the express intention of Object 2 to enlighten the public about all manner of things: robust, vibrant, independent and innovative sector. Now, the second object is laudable, but it does not indicate how a regulator should proceed in support of the object. Robust suggests strength. It's sometimes linked to capacity development. But whose responsibility is capacity development? Is this a call for more government support? Or should more able people take over from less able people? Is a vibrant charity one that has a great deal of merger and acquisition activity, or one where there is substantial turnover of charity personnel, or the average age of charities climbs or diminishes with time? In what sense is the sector independent when government is the principal payer? As one charity closes, another opens. Indeed, almost 3,000 charities open their doors every year, and nearly 3,000 close their doors, or at least come off the register each year. This is perhaps one sign of dynamism in the market, but is it innovative? Save the Children Australia Chief Executive Officer Paul Ronalds wrote recently, quote, 10 new organisations are created each business day. To put it simply, there are too many, end of quote. And further quote, donors are growing tired of being hassled by endless charities with similar causes, end of quote. One observer from an Australian survey suggested that government should say, quote, enough is enough. You must ensure that there's no other organisation in Australia that is doing what you're doing, end of quote. Well, it's most unlikely a government would do such a thing. But better information would help. If mergers and acquisitions are a sign of dynamism, as Ronalds has suggested, there appears little of it in the charity market. Since December 2012, only 400 charities in Australia have voluntarily revoked their registration with the ACNC because of a merger or an acquisition. We intend to undertake, in conjunction with RMIT, a survey of registered charities to find out how many charities have considered mergers and reasons why they have or have not proceeded. Donors might drive dynamism if they have a way of searching like charities. And when they do, they are bound to ask the obvious question, which one is best? Discussion and measurement of each of these objects may enlighten the perennial debate around the question, what is the right number of charities? Well, I think the answer lies somewhere between 1 and 24 million. The second objective requires much better metrics to give it life, and it needs to be understood in conjunction with the third objective, regulation reduction. One charity recently informed me that it had several hundred acquittals each year. This probably reflects the fact that it wins several hundred government contracts each year. Consider this case study. Known as a charitable fundraising organisation, the organisation is a mid-sized charity that started life 30 years ago, courtesy of the efforts of several doctors' partners. Their concern was for the after-patient care of their partners' charges. They raise money through cake stalls and the like. Now the entity is a $10 million per year business with government operating grants of $9 million. The remainder is receipts from customers. In 2016, there was $200,000 in donations and bequests, and 200 volunteers, and more than 80 staff. The published description of what the organisation does was generic and not particularly helpful. My knowledge of the organisation is that nurses visit people in their homes and they do a mighty good job. The CEO spends time applying for government grants and does a mighty good job. But the director's report reads as follows, quote, "The long-term objectives and strategies consist of pursuing opportunities for commercial alliances, mergers and acquisitions." And, quote, "to be a provider of choice for consumers in the new consumer-directed care market," end of quote. How is this organisation different to a not-for-profit or indeed a for-profit provider? And, the report goes on, quote, "to influence policy and program development for social change and social inclusion," end of quote. What is this other than a business development statement? And the success indicator is, quote, "increased funding and the client base." It's hard to detect in that report the charitable purpose. Now, this case study is not uncommon in the charitable sector. Therefore, the first piece of data that I want to post on each charity's record is the proportion of money that the charity receives from government. This has always been one of the most important questions that donors ask. Now, the Commission is the premier data collection agency for Australian charities. It collects information on registered charity governance and finances, quote, "to understand the work of the sector." Note that the advice to the Commissioner mentions the sector, not each charity. In November last year, Claire Rogers, CEO of World Vision, said, quote, "transparency is at the heart of the donor relationship," end of quote. I agree. Donors trust charities to do what they promised, but there is a considerable difference between a single charity and its relationship with its donors, and 55,000 charities and their relationships with their donors and potential donors. A donor may be satisfied that their charity does what it promised, but what if another charity could do better? What if many charities compete in one field but few in others? These are questions of the performance of the charity market, not a single charity. Indeed, how does one interpret a charity's performance other than by comparison with similar charities? Data is available to inform the market of these wider questions, but not in a form that donors can readily use. At present, the Commission is not allowed to present data in a form different to the collected form through the annual information statement. This will require a change to regulations to allow discretion to take presently collected data and place it in a usable form. While the website is used to verify the registration of a charity, it cannot easily be used to search charities of comparable purpose. To solve this problem, the Commission aims to apply to all registered charities a taxonomy of not-for-profit purposes, so that the donor could search among charities that do similar things. This has the potential to reveal overlaps and gaps in the market. Now, this is hardly radical. It is possible now to compare like charities and charity financial performance. The data is published on our website. Few do such work, however, because it's too inaccessible and inaccurate. Perhaps it's just as well, because the indicators of what charities actually do and the people or things they assist and how are not clear. And the lack of uniformity in accounting standards means that financial data cannot be fairly compared. A fit-for-purpose accounting standard of reporting for Australian charities, such as the UK standard of recommended practice or New Zealand's specific accounting standards, would give the Australian charity market an important tool for transparency. There is some progress on that front. For example, income for not-for-profit standard will be mandatory beginning next year. Further development, however, is a matter for the Australian Accounting Standards Board. The National Standard Chart of Accounts and Data Dictionary would help unify the way in which small and medium charities especially account for their transactions. While all government agencies have agreed to use it in their requirements of charities, and about 10% of mainly grant-funded charities use it, that remains a very small proportion of charities. The complete rollout to that class of charities alone is some years away. What the Commission can do is use financial data that it gathers through the Annual Information Statement to better effect. Publication of simple, comparable data may stimulate the development of a standard of practice in the sector. Simple metrics can be used to stimulate debate. Whether they can be as powerful as the Holy Grail measures, such as how much of the donation was used for purpose, or what was its impact, is debatable. But AIS-based measures can be done soon. While the annual information statement data can be used to lead debate on better use of resources, governance standards and financial disclosure are designed to seek out or indeed prevent misuse of resources. The object of the governance standards system is to provide a minimum level of confidence that registered entities, quote, meet community expectations about managing their affairs and the use of public money, volunteer time and donations, end of quote. Risks associated with the government standards are matters such as private benefit, fraud, tax evasion, harm to beneficiaries, especially to vulnerable children and adults, and disqualifying purposes such as political advocacy or illegal activity. The primary sources of a complaint are the public, persons in a charity, other government agencies, media, and employees and beneficiaries. It costs a great deal to investigate compliance breaches. In 2017, the Commission revoked the charity status of 26 organisations following investigations into their activities and operations. This was a 30% increase compared to 2016. Since the Commission was established, it has revoked the charity status of only 59 organisations following investigations. Now, if I were able to double resources to compliance, the numbers of investigations and revocations would still remain small. But here too, there may be a better way using data. We are presently trawling 5 years of data, searching for trends, vulnerabilities, and likely indicators of things that may go wrong. Increasingly, the Commission may generate a great deal of its own intelligence on risks in the sector. When we find disconcerting trends, we would alert classes of charity. This would be less resource intensive and proactive, identifying problems before they hit. Finally, seeding debate with simple questions such as, has your grant-making charity attempted to measure the impact of programs it funds? And if so, has the board informed members and donors of the measures, should spark debate in the broader community. In some ways, the charity sector is a sleeping giant. With data gathered by law, I aim to wake it and let it produce more charitable works. Thank you.